Hello, welcome and welcome back, everybody. I'm Ronnie Sarman from Microsoft Switzerland, a technical evangelist since many years. And I did a session before where I show most of the new feature Windows 8.1. And in this session, I will continue based on the sample that I built, but don't worry, if you weren't there, you can see the recording. And so on, so it's not a problem. And I start from new components. So it's really, this session is mostly focused on data. How do I get data? How do I show data? How do I save data? And so on. Because Windows 8 and 8.1, they add more and more capability to write also nice line of business or consumer-oriented applications that are based on data, etc. And especially if you want to provide data to touch-based device is very easy, very performing, and the API are pretty rich to what you can do already. I will show also some third-party control if you want to enrich more your application, so it should be fun. One thing, the sample I will publish as always together with the slides, so you get all the code. Not sure that you will understand my code because it's a mess. No, I'm kidding. If you look back at the recording and the code, you will make sense of all the small samples that are part of the final solution. So, to recap, I want to show what I built in the first session. So it's a stock application, so it fits perfectly consumer-oriented people or more line-of-business, data-driven people. So, I have my solution here in Visual Studio. Open, I start my application. The first thing you notice is the new app control with all the section here, with the background that had some fun before. This is a chart, this is not a chart, it's just an image, but I wanted to show one thing that we have news, like pop-up controls, where you can change the charts from 5 days to 1 day, for example. We added a web browser called WebView. One new thing is in Windows 8.1 that it merged very well together with XAML stack. So if I open the app bar goes on top and don't cause any kind of problem. In the session, I show even some effects like skewing and so on. We had, of course, the app bar with toggle button and so on. Some new stuff here. The new search box where I can type and get some autocomplete that is auto-persisted, for example, so I can get some quote here. I get the quotes with some JSON parsing. We will do all this data new again because it's an important part. And then I show the PDF integration where I can read a PDF from the package and go through the image as a PDF with a flip view. So I show some of this thing. And last thing I did demo is the new API. So the new control for date picker and time picker. Hallelujah, they're there. And also the possibility to add something to the calendar, to the calendar API. There is also a contact API. If I want to save something that I search, I want to save it as my contact person, I can do it the same, something that was not possible with version 8.0. So this is the base application. It's based on the app template, so most of the things were already there. I simply copy and paste some code in there. Good. So, let's continue. So one thing that I didn't show this morning and I want to show now is the navigation concept. So the idea is that there is this app control that is the main page, and when I click to some section, I can navigate to some sub pages. For example, you have two sub pages, one that is the details on the stocks, this one, and one that is my portfolio link. So the app control allows you to have section, navigate to a section, or navigate to a detail. Nothing new in terms of navigation is the same in Windows 8, the same in Silverlight. One small tip that I give to all people is to experiment with caching. By default, when I navigate to this page is destroyed. So every time I go back, it's reloading the instance and so on. Slow and ugly for the user because I click Microsoft to see the Microsoft chart, I go back, I find myself here. Not really nice. So one thing to do is to use the caching already in the navigation frame where you can say, oh, I want to keep the instance. I will use more memory, But the advantage is much more responsive. So pick the one that fits better your scenario, but think about, not just go back and people have annoying browsing. I'll show you why it's annoying right after. So let's go and implement some navigation. In fact, if I open the app template, the default that comes with Visual Studio, he has an app page, an item page, and a stock and a section page. So actually, I think they don't work anymore because I broke the code, but if you will go here in portfolio, it goes to a section. In this case, it's crashing. And the next one, if you go click here, it will go to a quote. So let's fix why it's crashing and so on. So the first thing I want to go in the app page, and you can see on the app control here, if I scroll through the various section, you see that there is a section header click that I see. Oh, if I click the section header, it goes to this event handler. So let's go and look at the code here. And you can see it's passing some data and some stuff that I don't have it. So this is the default template code. I clean it up and I say, look, go to a page and don't do anything special with that one for the moment. And so I can go to the page itself, so the section page, and clean up all the mess. No, it's not a mess. It's a sample template that is in there that absolutely don't want to have it. So the collection view here, I want to get rid of. Then what else we get? Voila. Then here there is some data context that I don't want to. And then in my here, all the content I want to get rid of. So here we go. So basically, I want a blank section, and I want to give it a title here. So for example, here, there should be, instead of this property, it should get the title from here. So let's call it portfolio. Right? So far, so good. And let's clean it up also. There's surely some code behind that will annoy me. So like the observable collection here, I don't use it. And this one, I don't use it. So now I simply have a page, an empty page. I can go into that empty page and go back. So if I run again the application, I think I have some mistake in there. Yeah, this one also needs to go away. Voila. So now if I go, I can finally navigate to my portfolio and back. You see how ugly it is? I need to go here. I click portfolio. When I go back, I don't want to be and see my super beautiful image of this morning, but I don't care. I want to be back here, right? So how do I fix that? It's very simple. You can go in the app page, so the main page up there, and you can enable a property on the page. Let's put here, it's called navigation cache mode, and you can say enable or required. And right now, if I do the same, I will get automatically, will not recreate the instance. So if I'm here, I go to portfolio, I go back, I'm back exactly the same point, much quicker and where I wanted to. So that's first thing to notice. I can fix my navigation code in this way. So the next one is a bit more complex because this control is a user control that I created. When I click to this user control, I want to go to the details page of this control. So I need to cascade this event quickly. So let's do that. In my quote controls, basically there is a grid view. Opala, let's make a bit more space. Voila. I have a grid view. And this grid view, you can see I have item click enable. So when I click on the items, it's really annoying this thing. If I click in the items, it will go and navigate to that specific items. So if I click in this template, it should navigate. So what I want to do is to add an event for that, item click, and navigate to that event handler. And so now I have the click items inside the user control. So now the next thing I need to do is to try to cascade the event or rise the event to my app page so it can decide where to go. So I expose the event easily. So I can say I want a public event. It should be item click event handler. Let's call it item click. There we go. And basically, I want to expose this event. So I say if item click, Item click. There we go. Not null. So if somebody's subscribing to my event, call that event, pass in the sender, and pass in the arguments. The arguments here is cool because I'm passing in the click item. So exactly what item you did click. And so I'm ready to go. And now I need to subscribe to this event. So I go on top of my app page where my object is stored. So here in the section, there is some section. Let's make it also small so you can see it where it is. Maybe a bit bigger. Voila. Voila. So now if I go to the section, and there is a some point in the section, you see I have my quote control, that is this one. And now in this quote control, I can add my item click event handler. And I can go in here, and I have my item click. So finally, I click in the control, it goes up on the app. On the app, I catch the event, and I can decide which navigation, to which page to go. So now, it was already in there, the code on the template, so I can get rid of that. So I can copy this one and get rid of this one nobody's using. And basically, I can navigate to that specific control. So I say, navigate to item page, so it's a page that is already there in the template. And now the cool thing, I can say, look, I pass in the clicked items. So I pass in the object where it's bound, in this case, a quote object. So now, finally, I can go in this item page that is here and also get rid of everything that I don't need, the data context, and I don't want to have any data context here. I don't want to have the design data context because I don't need that. Okay, perfect. Let's make it a bit nicer. Voila. And then here, basically, so far as nothing. But in this case, I would like to have the title bind to the symbol, the value that I have in my quote. In this case, the symbol. So I bind to symbol. So we show the name of the quote. Perfect. And now the last thing is, when I load my things, I don't want this observable collection. It's just code cleaning up. And normally start from blank, but the template is already a lot in place, so it makes a bit easier. So now you can see I have a load state event already in place for me. So when I call, when it gets called this page, it will call this event handler. So here I can do the logic. So I can do, I say, look, this dot data context equal to e navigation parameter. So I pass in the quote object and I bind to the quote symbols. So if you look at my JSON payload here, you can see I have a quote object with a symbol property. So now if I didn't do any mistake, I can click to my quote. Hoppala. Oh, it's not working. What did I do wrong? Let's see what I'm doing wrong, if it's at least going into there. Yes. Nobody's subscribing the event. Why not? So I know I did put event handler, the event wire up in the wrong control. It was the snap view control. You see, I'm coding live, it's not flash demo. So unfortunately I find out the error pretty soon. Oh, phew. So tension level, whoa. Good. So I can see the Microsoft, I can see the Apple price, or right now nothing. But you see, I can navigate through details, it's data bound, I get the object, so I can do stuff with the object, or I can go to another section that is called portfolio. And in these two sections, we will add more and more during the session. So I think the key learning here, you have navigation events. New in Windows 8.1, if you want to put something in the stack between this back and something back, you can control that too. So that's pretty nice that we didn't have it yet in 8, but as normal navigation stack. Good. So another thing, of course, in Windows 8 and 8.1, we ship with controls. In 8.1, more controls, but there's always a gap. And one of these gaps is filled by the something called Modern UI Toolkit that you find in CodePlex. It's an open source project, and it's really the goal to fill the gap to some of the control that you're missing. You get the source code, so there's not too much risk. And some of the controls are really ported from the old Silverlight toolkit. For example, the char control, that is pretty easy to use, pretty powerful. There are third-party char control, even more rich. I show a couple of third-party control later on. But this one is fairly easy to use and fairly powerful. It's free, and you get the source code. So it's a kind of good matching if you want to present the demo, the data. So now, what I want to have it here, I want to show some history data, right, of my stock. So let's go in here. And the first thing, I want to use this char control. So I need to add a reference to that. Oh, voila. Add reference. I browse is the XAML toolkit here, and then I need also in here, packages, and I want this data visualization, and pick up the data visualization. So I need two library, the two general toolkit and the data visualization that are the chart. So now when I click the quote, it should go in that specific chart for that quote. So in the items page, in this item page, it would be cool to show a nice chart here. So you have a region here where you can add the content. So let's go there. Grid, and I make it a bit bigger. So first thing, I need to declare a namespace. So let's declare a namespace of the char control. So where is through? Sorry. I should have been positioned here. So I want to use the charting control. So in XAML, you do like this. You create a namespace, and you say, I want to use this charting. It will be using this library. And so finally, I can go here and add my char control. I already predefined it because it's a bit of typing. And of course, I will do a lot of mistake in this typing. But the concept is very simple of this chart. If you have done the Silverlight one, exactly the same. So what I have a new char control. It will take all the spaces that I give to the page with a bit of margin. And he has two charts in there. He has a column, basically showing the volume for every day. And then I have a line that basically shows me the closing price of every day. So I have one chart over the other. That's pretty cool that you can do that and do two types of charts. OK, now, where do I get the data from? How do I get data from? So as I explained this morning, you basically have choice to use a SOAP or a REST API. We support both. And in REST API, that is a bit more of a trend because they're much more simple to use, you can get a JSON or an XML payload. So in my case, I use the Yahoo services where you can get XML or JSON. I pick JSON so I can show a bit more how you do. So if I go to the Yahoo website, they have a special console site where you can test the query against the database that they have and get the results. So basically, here is a query that is a construct in this. Maybe this morning I didn't have time, but it would be good to show it. Could I get another notepad? Where can I show it? I can show it here. So I showed you the URL here. So basically, it creates you all the query ready to use, say, historical data, where, symbols, and so on. So it's created my URL for me so I can test it. I can understand what it is. So let's get rid of that. Now, if I go back to my console thingy here, I can query and say I want to either XML or JSON. So I want the historical data from Yahoo from this date to this date. I can test it. It will show me back a result. I can see it in a tree view if I want to. So you see, for every quote, for every day, I have a result payback and so on. And now, how do I get this data parsed in .NET? And that one cool thing that we have, since Visual Studio 2012, so it's nothing super new, but it's cool. I can simply copy the JSON payload, go in Visual Studio, go in a normal class, and I can simply say edit, pass special, JSON as class, it creates the class for me. So I don't need to go and parse the JSON, figure out it's really, really handy, you see? Now, I just change the name because I already used it this morning, so I don't want to have it twice, the same name. So I simply pass back my things here. It's exactly the same as the normal passed one, just it's called query history, root object history, query history, and quote history. So that's the only thing that changed. So now we got the structure. Now we need to call the web service, get the data loaded in the structure, and show it in the chart. So in the item page, load state here, I can go and grab some data from there. So let's go and add a code here and say, okay, I want to use an HTTP client. I want to call, and here I pass in this URL that it generated Yahoo for me. And at some point, I want to pass the symbol as quote. So I need to have it that define it. So here I know that I get, so let's declare it. I can say I want a quote. It's called quote here. And the quote should be quote equal at the quote that I get from the navigation parameter, right? So now I have my quote. Can leave it like this, who cares? And then here I can say get chart data. There we go. So I'm getting the chart data for the specific symbol of that quote, so Microsoft, Apple, and so on. And at this point, what I do, I read the stream. I use this data context serializer that basically is transforming my JSON payload in my class. In which class this quote history is the one that we copy-paste before. You can see it, eh? It basically has some information of the query and the result, right? And at this point, I'm ready to go. So I go and grab the column series, the line series, and I bind them to the quote twice. It's the same quote contained both, so I bind it one because I want to see the volume and one because I want to see the close price. And then for one axis, I sync the min and maximum value because if not, the chart was not so nice to see. So that's about it. Request, load it, bind it to the chart. So now, if I didn't do any mistake here, can go here, navigate. Let's pick up something different. Maybe Tesla here. And here you have a nice chart. So now I have a quiz for you. Guess where I did buy this stock. Did I buy it here, or did I buy it exactly here? So, and it's a true story, I bought it exactly that day. So I didn't have this nice application that predicts the stock price, no? So just to see. But you see how nice I have the volume compared with the price in a nice chart, and of course I can navigate back, look at much more solid stock like Microsoft. That would have been a much better. Unfortunately, I have that too. Compensate a bit. But it just shows the nice way to interact with data. It's touch-oriented. I can click on element. I can get value and so on. So it's nice control we have available. And the way that you get data in your modern app is very easy with this JSON parsing and so on. So it's not too much complex. Good. Perfect. So, another thing that we had a lot of requests for line of business and things like this is, why cannot have multiple windows? Why cannot run two applications at the same time? Why cannot use multiple displays? I have two displays, the notebook, the big one, or I have two big ones. Why can only run Metro apps, modern apps in one or so? So we removed that limitation. Now, you can run two applications, three applications at the same time, having a split, vertical split. Or if you want, you can even the same application run twice in two windows. So you can copy-paste between two documents, two emails, for example, or maybe compare two charts, like we want to do. So in fact, what I want to achieve is this: compare Microsoft with Apple or Microsoft with Tesla and so on. And you can do this one, and of course, one of these windows, it could be in another display, so you can drag it on multiple display. So that was a big limitation for line of business apps, and now we took it away. So let's do that. For doing that, what I want to do in the item page, I want to add an app bar, the toolbar for Windows 8. So in this case, I want to go, I think I prepare one. So here's a quick recapitulation. New one in Windows 8.1, we have this app bar button that is pretty cool because you don't need to do anything. You simply say the event handler, and you can even pick the icons. And actually, the icons, we have this nice icon repertoire. No more uncommenting strange things. So in fact, I can go and say, pick up the icon, and you can see here, I can pick it from the full repertoire of icons, or I can use a bitmap and so on, so it's much nicer. I get IntelliSense, so in fact, if I can do that, I can say I want doc write, and you can see it right down on the bottom of the designer. If I make it bigger, that I have my nice new windows, I say new windows and dock it to the right. So now we need to do the code. And here, I said, oh, cool. It will be code something similar like this. New Windows, in New Windows, I want this content, right? I don't know, I think the developer there was drunk, and he came up with a nice solution that I copy and paste from a sample, and I have hard time to understand. But I explain it to you that you will not understand because from a guy that didn't understand that, it would be a challenge. But anyway, the cool thing, it works, and it does what it should do. And I explain you a bit what it does. Let's resolve all that. So I need the current application view. I say, give me myself. Give me a new one. For this new one, I want to get to East thread. So I'm switching. I'm not running anymore in my thread, I switch in the other thread. Makes sense. Now, in that thread, execute what? Get that view, that, guess what, is exactly this view, but I need to get it in the other thread. At this point, finally, some code that makes sense. I create a new frame. In this frame, I navigate. So I say I want to navigate to that specific page, item page, the one that we used so far. I pass in the quote. So, again, in this case, Microsoft, Apple, and so on. And finally, I set the content to that frame. So these three lines make sense, the rest not so much. And finally, I call this method, try show a standalone async, blah, 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 blah. More complex, but not. And you say, what will be the new app ID? You can even give a name so you can see it, because basically I'm really starting a new instance of this app. Huh? So then I can say what kind of screen usage you want to have, use half, less, minimum, and so on. And then I say you should be side by side with the current one, and again, it will use half. So if you really read the code, it kind of makes sense. I wish it would have been a bit nicer. But anyway, you get an example, and the really cool things is that you can go into that, and you can say, I want to get Microsoft, a bar, new Windows, and I want to get back, I don't know, compare it to Apple, and finally some justice in the stock with some better trends here. So you can see I can have Windows, I can change the size of both, and it's pretty cool that I can do these kind of things. And if I drag this one on another screen, it will work in that other screen. Of course, I can even start a new application. That's the classical thing, so I can put it here. So I have the camera, and this is the classical scenario by me. Oh, I did buy this stuff that's going down, down, down. Anyway, you can see I can have multiple applications running at the same time and still functioning. Compare it, look at the UBS. That's also not so good. Fortunately, I don't have any. Anyway, you see how I can do multitasking with modern UI. You can do copy-paste and all these kind of things. That was really a painful thing before because it was not there other than this small snap view that we had. Cool. So another interesting feature. So we did spend a lot of time to improve the grid view, list view performance, startup performance, showing data, et cetera, et cetera. We have placeholder, we have tricks to optimizing, because we want that people you know, one of the ugly things of the website that you get, you go to a website, yes, are these paging things with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 million, 20 million, super ugly. You need to click, 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 click. It's really not a nice idea. On the grid view, you had other paging mechanisms and so on. And in Windows 8, we put an 8.1, we did improve a bit the performance. We have something called incremental loading. So the possibility to continue to load data while you're browsing, or in this case, while you're scrolling. As you notice, you use a lot of scrolling things. So the first thing I want to mention, that we have UI virtualization. It means that you have 10,000 elements on the screen. We don't load all the 10,000 in memory, but we keep in memory only the one that you are seeing and a bit left and a bit right. That makes memory consumption much better and so on. You can control, you can enable, disable, you can say one placeholder, what kind of recycle. There's a lot of information around, but by default, you get virtualization on. So normal cases, you don't need to worry too much, like we will not worry in my sample. So the next thing that you probably want to implement is this called incremental loading. So this concept that I'm scrolling through, as soon as I reach the next part, I'm calling a web service, getting the data back, populating the grid, and so on, until I reach the end. So this is the new paging. No next, previous, 1, 2, 3, 5, 10 million click. You simply go through. It's much more smoother and nicer to see. So let's implement incremental loading. So let's first build the UI, maybe. Voila. OK, I didn't update the virus protection between launch. So keep it there. Hopefully, we get no attack. If the demo fails, you know it's a virus. So I have a good excuse. Now, the next thing I wanted to do is to create a bit the UI element here. So I have my item page here that I used. And let's see if it all, so you can see it. And basically, I have this char control, right? And now I want to have another area that I see the historical data in terms of data, not in terms of a chart, and to be able to scroll it through the full history that they have at Yahoo that they give it to you is 1 year back. So now I want to use a flip view. Does it enable me to flip through two views that you have? So I decide to use flip view. I say flip view dot items. And in these items, I create a new flip view item. And basically, I need two, one for the chart and one for my grid view. So I take my chart, cut, copy here. And the next one, I want to add the grid view. So somewhere here, I have my grid view that is very similar. I'll explain you of what I did this morning. Basically, what it does is called history grid. I don't want any selection. I don't want any item click. And basically, for every item that it finds, so for every quote value, it will create a grid of 250 by 400. And then in that grid, it will show the date, the open, the market opening price, the market close, the low price, and the high price of that day. So those one with a bit formatting, a bit will be bigger, a bit smaller. And basically, those properties are the one from the JSON payload here. Eh? Exactly those ones. So you get the date, the open, the close, the high, and the low. So it's bounded to that collection. So now I have the data. Next thing I need to do is to load it incrementally. So I want to bind the first set of data and then slowly let the data grid ask for more data, more data, more data. For that one, you need to implement quite a bit of method and so on the samples, on the website. There is, oh, I cannot drag this thing, whatever. On the sample, there is a base class that it tells you with a lot of code. So I ship it also in my sample here. So it's called incremental loading based. So if I go and look at that specific code, incremental loading based, there we go. Yes, a bit of code to run to add new data and so on. So you use this one for most of the things is good, and you have some basic things. So it makes much, much easier to do your own incremental classes. So let's go back here in my JSON payload and implement that specific base class. And here is where the magic is happening. I'm saying, look, I want an incremental base loading class that implements that specific base class that I just imported. And then basically what I have a property that says, do I have more items or not? And I have a constructor where I get the symbol, Microsoft, etc. And now what the grid view will do, every time it doesn't have enough data, it will call first. Do you have more data? I say yes or no. If yes, it will call this method, load more items override async. So the load more items it will call. And here I can do my logic. I say, look, I'm using again the HTTP client. I define that I get 40 items at a time. I say, where I am, so view that I'm a collection, I say, how many items do you already have loaded in the connection? So this is where I should start getting the next one, plus the total. And at this point, I go query Yahoo. Yahoo has this function that basically parentheses, you say the starting index for how many. So it continues like this. And at this point, same as before, stream, JSON, deserializer, deserialize it back in the root object. Once I get the root objects, I add it to my array. I also check, look, here is Yahoo returning. It tells me how many did find. So if it find less than the total that I requested, it means I'm at the end, don't request anymore. So this is how it works. So now we can go back in my item pages, and finally, I can implement. So I can say, here, I want an incremental, what was, loading class of type query history async, and let's say query history or quote history, I have no idea, I need to copy because I'm sure, quote history, okay. So I use this class with quote history, declare it, and now we need to populate. And the cool thing is super easy, because what I do here, I say, look, create a new instance. What did I copy? Fantastic copy-paste skill. Voila. It should be the only skill that I have, but I also do mistake here. So I get quote history. It's a new instance with the symbol that I get from the navigation. So Microsoft, Apple, and so on. And then I bind it. I don't need to worry anymore about paging and so on. So now it should work. I get in here. I get to the nice things. I get to Microsoft, get the chart, navigate the flip view, and you see now I have the data. And while I'm scrolling, watch here below, you will see that slowly it's adding more data and more data and more data. Very cool, very nice for the user, and way less painful that, and now I probably reach the end of this loading more data in the background. So this is really cool. You can implement paging without paging, in fact. So now, the things that I didn't really like about these things is a kind of nice effect, but gray on gray is not really nice for stock. So another feature that you normally tend to use it when you use data-driven application Windows 8 is called binding converter. So when you do data bounding, you have the possibility to influence how you bind things. And one thing to influence is put some piece of code between the binding and the data source. In this case, they're called converter. So there is also one trick that you can do if you want to do your own logic in the converter, not saying that it's good or bad. One thing that you can do is to bind directly to the full object. So now I bind to the quote object, so I can get the quote history object, and I can compare the open and close and say, oh, if the open is less than the close, it means I'm winning money. In the other case, I'm losing money, I do red. So this is one trick that you can do. So let's implement that. Perfect, I'm right in time also. Cool. What I'm doing here. Okay. Voila. So now, I want to add the converter. So let's create a new class here and call it converters. Okay. So the logic of the converter in this case is super simple. What I'm doing, I say, I want to implement an interface, iValue converter, and so the interface mandates you to implement convert. In this convert, you get the bounded value. In this case, I said I bound the full quote history, so I can get back my quote. And then I do the logic, oh, look, if it's less than, I'm making a gain, so it will be green. If it's more, I'm making a loss, it's red. If it's equal, it means that it's black, I don't know, it's kind of stable. So that's the way you do. Now we go back in these items controls, in my items page. I need to declare the converter. So let's get it. And let's add it here. There we go. So I define a background converter, and I give it a key. So a new instance of my background converter is available to be used on my XAML page. So now I can go down and declare my converter. So now what I want to change is here on my grid. So it's creating this square box, right, for every quote that I have. I want to change the background of that square go. So here, I pass it, I say, look, the background, it should be bounded to the object. So you can see, compared to here, I'm not setting any property to bound. I bound to the complete object one way, so I'm not converting back. I'm not doing any editing. And please use this converter. So in this case, I go in. And it's also cool if you want to debug data binding, you can add it there and you can go in the debugger and see what kind of value, because we don't still have data binding debugging, that we had it in Silverlight, for example. And so now, with this trick, I have a nice, much nicer UI, if I didn't do any mistake. So I can go Microsoft, get my chart, and get my data, and you can see the data that was read or not while loading the data. So it's much nicer, you see, with a bit of tricks, of basic learning of data binding, converter, incremental loading, oops, it makes your application much nicer and so on. Now it did crash because I don't do any try catch on the results, so if Yahoo doesn't answer me, I'm not doing any error handling that you will need to, but this is the things that you can do. So, pretty cool and powerful concept that we have in data. Now, you probably want, in some cases, also to use data grid. So if you want to editing and do kind of things, and it seems like every time that we create a new platform, so we create a WPF, it took us about 2-3 releases before we put a data grid. Then we created Silverlight. Again, it takes 2-3 releases. And now we created Windows 8. Again, XAML, everything cool, and we will take another 2-3 releases before we put a data grid. The cool thing is that third-party control, I fill the gap with some really powerful ones. So there is one from Component One, from Telerik. I will show the Telerik one, but I want to show some of the controls available right now to build a data-driven application with Windows 8 and 8.1. So if I go here, I have the two samples, the Telerik controls, and then you see the Telerik that they ship. So for example, one cool thing is the radial menu. I can go in here, get the radial menu, click it, you get these nice radial things and so on. So you get this kind of new UI. If you want to spice up a bit more your application, you can use some of those controls. There are really some really great controls in there. I don't know, there is the map, there is the chart with much more functionality than the Silverlight one and so on. They have exactly, or let's say, very similar component one, but actually even one, just to show how powerful is the engine, they basically implement a full Excel engine, even compatible with Excel sheets. So for example, I can go and say, oh, I want to check my budget here, and you can even zoom in. And you can see I can even add formulas, say this one should be this multiplied by this one. Voila, so it has a full Excel functionality, or my preferred one for wedding budget, because we absolutely need it in our family. So here you can see, of course, the correction of error here. They're the classical, like saying, okay, bride ring, forget it, who cares? Something, you know, just to show, it's really the powerful of Excel inside a modern UI. It's expensive, the control, but if you need this kind of functionality, are already there. So, in our case, we want to keep it a bit more simple. We want to add a data grid. So we want to use the data grid from Telerik. I pick one just to show that they exist and they work. So I can add an existing item, a reference, sorry, and go pick in my solution, my resin, and the RAD control from Telerik. Cool. Now, I had this item page where I have the items details. The next thing I wanted to do is a portfolio, because it will be cool that I can go in and work inside a portfolio. So let's go and say, in this order, in this section page that we call it portfolio, I want to add here the Telerik control. So in this case, to use Telerik again, exactly like the chart, I need to declare the namespace. There we go. Namespace, huh? Using Telerik grid equal using this namespace. And now I can go in and say Telerik grid, blah, 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 and create my data grid. I already prepared it, it doesn't have anything anyway in there. So there is this RAD grid, and I have this new data grid object where I will load it with data. Now, I already have loaded all the quotes in my app page, so I want to share that data. So let's just give it a thing, how it's called. There we go. And basically, I want to share that data. So to do that, I make it global, that data. So let's go here, and I define it a public static result, and it's this one, quote result. Cool. And now basically in the quote control here, when I load the data, I will store it also there. So I can say app.quote results equal results. There we go. So I'm basically storing the data there. So when I navigate to the soup page, this section page, I don't need to load again the data. And so now, finally, I can simply say, look, my data grid item source equal at app.queryResults, and I think I want the quote collection. So I'm reusing the same data source that I already populate on the navigation page, just to save a bit of performance. So now, if I didn't do any mistake, I can finally also get a grid in there. I have my portfolio grid. You can see you have some filtering. If you want to, you can enable some rules. You have some editing possibility. You have some grouping. So I said I want to group by ask price and so on. So you have some grouping. So really nice, powerful data grid. Even if we ship one day will not be as powerful as this third-party control. They have huge experience and invest a lot on creating grids. But anyway, we have grids, you can work with that, and so on. Now, it's nice to have grids, but then if I work with data, I want to do something with data. So it will be cool really to create a portfolio that can say, oh, I have 100 IBM at that price, and so on. So the next and basically last chapter of my session is, where do I store data? So, of course, you can store it server-side. It makes absolutely sense for tons of applications. But for some cases, you would like also to have local storage to save data locally. You want to have caching. You want to have private data. You want to have data that will be available when offline. Or you want to have data to improve performance. So here, basically, you have a couple of strategies. One is to simply serialize and deserialize your object structure XML or JSON, for example. So if you don't have too many data or you don't want to query or do complex things, that's perfectly viable, very simple. You stream XML to the file stream and it works. Or another approach, we don't have any SQL C, SQL Compact. You cannot access a local databases. Remember, it's isolated. But SQLite is pretty popular. We work together to have it running on Windows 8 and 8.1. It's a good approach to have a database locally. And the cool thing is that it's included in your application. You don't need to install and ask somebody to install, maintain a database engine. It's completely embedded in your application. And you can even, if you want to, embed the full database file if you want to start with already pre-populated. You know, you have some master data that you want to have it. You can start it there. So how do I use SQLite? So to use SQLite here, I add a reference. I pick up my reference to SQLite. And now you will see SQLite complains a bit here. Probably in the big screen, you don't see that much. There are two small errors. Say, look, you cannot use SQLite because it's dependent on C++. And C++, you need to create a package for every platform. So basically, you need to go. You simply need to recompile. You need to go in the solution and say, look, you want to compile this solution for x86 and for ARM when you ship the ARM version. So you don't need to change code or so on, but you know now they're gone. And then you need some, one of the cool wrapper around SQLite is linked to SQLite. So the possibility to use the link query engine on top of SQLite. So I use that solution, and basically is this SQLite you get from NuGet. And now I'm ready to go. So now what I want to do in my portfolio application, I want a possibility to save and load data on SQLite. So the first thing that I wanted to do is to save data. So as soon as I change something, I want to save data. So I said, oh, the pattern in modern UI is as soon as you navigate back, we save data. You can ask to save or not. In my case, we save it directly. I trust what I do. So you can say navigation helper dot save state. So when the OS decided to ask you, remember, Windows 8 can be terminated by somebody else. So the OS needs more resources. It can terminate your application. It's in the background. So we'll call this save state. So here, in the save state, I want to save some data. So first thing, I need a class because I serialize an object to a SQL database. So let's create it here, and let's add it here on top. There we go. Here. It's very simple. I create a portfolio view class. I explain you a bit more what I'm trying to do after. So now I can really save my data. So I can say, look, I want my data somewhere, and I will use it after. And now in save state, what I do? Save state is this one. Voila. So the way that it works, I can basically add access the local folder. So the way it works is, say, I use the isolated storage, and I say, look for a file called dbsqlite. You can even embed the file already in your package. When you start up, you copy from the package to the local folder. At this point, you have the databases. When you have the database, you create a connection, and I say, look, if I already have a portfolio view, I drop it, because I always save the complete portfolio. For performance reason, for me, it was better to drop the table and recreate, but you can send update if you want to. I wanted to keep it very simple. And I say, look, run in a transaction, insert all my collection of portfolio items. That's it. 5 lines of code, saving. Now I need to load it, right? So in the load state, I want to load it. But wait, I want to explain what I'm really trying to achieve, because it showed the power of link. Basically, I have my quotes data from Yahoo, and I have my portfolio data from SQLite. And what I want to do, without getting too ugly in looping through and so on, I want to get the current price on top of what I did buy. So I simply merge these two views. That's what I'm trying to achieve. So one data is coming from Yahoo, one data is coming from the SQLite, and I'm merging. So let's do that. There we go. It took me a while to get the query. Fortunately, Ken and Stefano helped me out with this thing because. So now I don't want to bind that data anymore. Like I did, I say, look, if I have some data, open the SQLite again, open the connection, and now here you can do a trick. You can say create a table because maybe it's not there, the table, but I still want to do the join. The first time I go in, I don't have any buy and ask, so it's really cheap coding if you want to. And then I do an outer join, left outer or right outer, between the Yahoo quotes and my portfolio table coming from my SQL. When I join with the symbol, and then I create a new view if you want to, and then what I read the symbol from the quote, the name from the quote, the quantity from SQLite, the price from the quote, and so on and so on. The price still from SQL and the rest from the quote. So I create a new object, execute the query, and bind it to the grid. So now I check that. Voila, I go in my portfolio. You can see I have my two new columns because it's a view, it's a bit different view that I had before. I have my quantity, so I can say, okay, I did buy Apple, let's say I did buy 10. Of course, if the price today is 520, I bought it probably at 60.50 because stupid as mean investing, there's nobody. And then again, 17. And now, if I navigate back, basically, you have saved on SQLite, so as soon as you go back, you see the values there. You don't trust me? I restart the application, go in, portfolio, I have my data saved, you see, with my value inside the SQLite. So it's pretty cool. You can do more complex query around the table and so on. I really see just the basic, but I think I show you more or less all the building blocks that you need to create line of business or data-driven application with Windows 8. Cool. So now we are ready for the final things. Okay, perfect. So deployment option. So the easiest way, an application, you send it for submission to Microsoft, you submit it to the store. After 1 or 2 days submitted, everybody can access. You can do password protection. You can even do your own activation code. So only people that buy the license through your own license. So if you're an ISV building line of business application for third-party company, it's very nice to use this model. You don't need to worry to ship updates. It all works well. People go to the store. You don't need to make it that they buy or they pay Microsoft, you can get paid, you can do your own license, and so on. There are some applications, of course, that you don't want to have it through Microsoft approved, that go through Microsoft process. Let's say you have a stock trading internal application for UBS, probably you don't want to go through the store. And so in this case, you can do something called site loading. It means that you can install your package through a script on your local machine. So far, so good. So, okay, cool. I do a batch file. Basically, it's a PowerShell. I can put in a group policy object. I can use System Center. I can use Tivoli. I can use any software distribution that I want. And I push out the application. So installing an SIP client or your line of business modern UI is nothing different. But, and there is a but, you need a couple of things. We want to make sure that people cannot start to distribute any software like this, that there's no control, full of viruses and so on. That's why I don't have my virus updated, because I only install modern UI application. So, this is complete bullshit, but anyway, it sounds like a good marketing speech here. We want to make sure that in UBS, only UBS-approved applications they get deployed. So that there is a verification. Kind of makes sense. We want secure. So the only way to do that is through certificate. You need to sign your application with a certificate that UBS trusts. And this certificate needs to be distributed. So the root authority needs to be distributed. The second thing is that by default, the machine cannot run side-loaded application. It can run your test application if you enter your password as a developer, but it cannot run. We want to protect the user, not that suddenly you get it from whatever Pirate Bay, eBay, whatever, iTunes things. So that's the point, right? So we want to protect. So that's why you need to enable. So there is a group policy set or a registry set. You say, look, I want to install side-loaded application. And look, the side-loaded application, they are signed with the certificate by UBS, VeriSign, whatever. So that's the two requirements. Enable that and so on. It looks like kind of almost cool. There's yet another but, and that's what makes it a bit more complex. If you have a Windows 8 Enterprise edition, domain join, so the classical machine inside UBS, Credit Suisse, Nestlé, Microsoft, and so on, you're ready to go. You set the group policy object enable side loading, you set the certificate, two things, and you distribute your application. If you have a Windows 8 Enterprise, Pro, or RT that are not domain join, so the second two, they cannot domain join, the first one not, you need a side load key. It means it's a key that you enter in the product, and this one you need to buy it from us. So if you're not domain joined, you want to, you need to buy it. If you have software assurance, you get it for free. If not, you need to buy it. So this is a part that personally, is personal opinion, is a bit complex. So the point is like this. In most enterprises, it will simply work. So you don't need to worry, but what you need to worry, if you start to develop a modern UI for tablet in Credit Suisse, in UBS, in Microsoft, and so on, is to talk with the IT department as soon as possible to make sure that the certificate and the group policy object are in place and make sure in which kind of target device you are targeting, right? If you do KMU application, the best approach is to publish in the store. It's the easiest way, cheaper and so on. You can even sell it or not sell it through the store, that's we don't care. So you can do your own building system and so on. Is the easiest way. On larger enterprise, this is probably the right approach. You can do it, it's doable, it's very secure, so that's really a good thing. But of course, it's a bit of work. So if you are the first step deployed in a large enterprise, it can take a couple of days or weeks before everything is in place. So just to be aware, side-loading or store, side-loading, it means a bit of work for the IT department. Be aware, not be surprised that you need to be live tomorrow and you go ask the guy, ah, do the GPO policy now very quickly and so on. So we have also software. So we have a cloud software, iTunes, or System Center Configuration Management that can do the work of deploying application for you. But once you have it in place, you can even use scripting, whatever you want. So it's like installing a normal Win32 software. There's even IntelliShield, I think they build an installer. So there is all, it's like installing a WinFormat is not very different, just that you need the trust of the machine and the certificate. Good. So to conclude, I think Windows 8.1, already 8 was good, but 8.1 is very good. You can build really nice consumer, business-to-consumer application by also line-of-business, intranet kind of application, especially where you want to target machine like this, as I showed this morning, with docking station, full power. You get device, keyboard, tablet. Now we fix even the battery life, almost 9 hours. So with a really powerful machine, so you can enable a lot of nice scenario for mobile worker. And here you have a rich platform, a rich API to enable that. I've shown you like navigation, charting, the multi-windows, the infinite scrolling that is really cool. So I think there is a lot of things that you can create rich, very powerful application with this platform. As I said, the sample will be shipped with a PowerPoint, and I will be around all the afternoon. And for the people stay tomorrow, I will be tomorrow here also. I will be in the Microsoft booth. If you have questions, you want to see more, understand more what I did, I'm more than happy to help you out, or at least try to help you out. Thank you for your time. Enjoy the rest of the day.